UNC Greensboro recently celebrated its 125th anniversary, and we shared the stories of its evolution from an all-women's college to the diverse, respected liberal arts university it has become. There is one story that stands alone among the others. It's the day the women's college became desegregated. That day, the first two black women stepped on the campus as students. And joining us now is one of those students, Joanne Smart Drain. Joanne, welcome to State of Things.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Good to have you here. Take us back to that day in 1956. Do you remember getting your acceptance to the college, then the women's college?
I do indeed. I received that information from an Associated Press reporter.
A reporter.
Who called me and said, you know, how does it feel to be the first black student to be admitted to the women's college? And that was, you know, the first I'd heard of it. I hadn't gotten any information from the school itself. So,
wow.
Well,
and what
mind-boggling.
What did you tell that reporter?
You know, I barely remember saying very much to him except, are you sure you've got the right information? Mm. And he said, yep, that you should be hearing from the school soon. And I, you know, just thanked him for giving me the information and told him how pleased and scared I was.
tell us more about that. 1956, yeah. It is still an all-women's college. It's called mm-hmm. the North Carolina Women's College. And you applied. And it was you were going to be among the first. You and one other student were going to be the first to desegregate. What were you feeling? Why did you do that?
Well, you know, it was, as you said, the mid-50s. And Brown versus Board of Education had just been announced in 1954. I was a sophomore at Ligon High School in Raleigh. And, you know, that was big news to the African-American community, and particularly in my school. And, you know, we were told that, you know, any moment now, you know, the schools were going to be desegregated and, you know, we're going to go off to these formerly all-white schools and those students were going to come to our school. And little did we know that it would be years and years down the road before any of that actually happened. But I think that was the impetus for mm-hmm. realizing that, you know, this was something that was an opportunity that was opening up, and we were encouraged to take advantage of it.
You did. You and Betty Tillman arrived on campus that fall semester. What was that like for you?
Well, Betty and I had met one time before, and that was when we had taken our entrance exams for applying to the university. And she and I were the only two black students in the audience. She spotted me, I spotted her, and so
you didn't have any trouble picking each other.
We have no trouble at all finding each other, and that was the first time we'd met. And little did we know that eventually we would be the two students who were accepted at the university.
So you were accepted, but were you accepted? How is it to be?
Yeah,
on
that's
that
a good. That's a great question. We were admitted, I would mm-hmm. say, not fully accepted, because the chancellor at that time, I remember very well his making the comment that we were not sought, and that that we were there by the decree of the courts, not by the consent of the governed or the will of the people. So he made it very clear, you know, that this was something that the university had to do, wasn't something that they wanted to do, and as a matter of fact, had fought doing it for some time.
So how did you feel going on that campus, and how did students take that? I mean, obviously that's coming from the top. You might
yeah.
feel that in the
yeah.
classroom as well.
Well, you know, the good thing, Frank, was that the leadership of the student government had taken a stand on desegregating the university. And so the student leadership was very much in favor of admitting black students to the campus. And I think that they provided some example for other students as well. Now, you know, the attitudes ran the gamut from, you know, what are you doing here? Why do you want to come? To, you know, some students who were very accepting. So, you know, you had a wide range of of attitudes and experiences, too.
Now, there still wasn't full desegregation when it came to, for instance, your living quarters.
That is correct. As a matter of fact, the interesting thing about our living quarters was that we had an entire wing of a dorm designated exclusively for the two of us. And I understand that that many of the white parents who had learned that the university was going to be desegregated were very concerned about the bathroom facilities mm-hmm. available for their daughters. And, you know, the Jim Crow was very much alive and well during that period when you had separate bathroom facilities for blacks and whites and drinking fountains and, you know, the whole gamut. And so the university's response was to, you know, to designate this entire wing of a dorm to the two of us.
Wow. There's that bathroom question again. Yes. That doesn't seem to go away in some circles around
absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
That's the big fear. Well, absolutely. So what was that like? I mean, on the one hand, you know, well, welcome. You've got a lot of space. But also, I mean, it's a reminder, it seems to me, every minute that you open and close your door that the doors aren't completely open.
Oh, absolutely. Right? It's, you know, it's a slap in the face. It's, you know, that constant reminder of second-class citizenship and, you know, failure to recognize the, you know, equality of persons. So,
did you get a good education there? What did you major in?
I had a great education, believe it or not. Yeah. At least I think so. Mm-hmm. I was an education major. And, you know, during that period, you know, women in particular, I think, just kind of thought that there were three career paths open to them. You could be a teacher, you could be a secretary, or you could be a nurse. Mm-hmm. The secretary and the nurse were ruled out in my essence, so I wanted to be a teacher, I think I was well-trained to be a teacher.
Interestingly enough, you have said that in the years immediately after and for some time afterward, you weren't particularly interested in, you know, alumni events and that
mm-hmm.
sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. As a matter of fact, I really felt, after I graduated, somewhat disconnected from the university. And I had no desire to go back. I was just glad I had graduated and, you know, was out in the career world seeking and following my career. But about 20 years after I had graduated, 20, 25 years after I had graduated, I got an invitation from members of the Neo-Black Society, which was an organization that had been organized after I left the university. And they were interested in what my experiences had been. And so they invited me back to come speak to a group of alums. And that was kind of the reconnection for me. I was really quite pleased to see how much the university had grown, how many more African-American students were enrolled. I mean, they were. At the time Betty and I were there, it was just the two of us and about 3,000 students, so we had no critical mass whatsoever. But later, you know, as the years went by, more and more African-American students enrolled in the university. And as I said, they became interested in what my experiences had been. So I came back, and that's how I really got started back with the university.
I wonder how that moment felt for you to know that in many ways, as you looked out over the faces that you were addressing, these now alum mm-hmm. of what had become after you left UNCG, where they made the fateful mistake of inviting men. No, forgive me. That's a joke.
Well, you said that, not me.
just a joke. But this is after that. And now you look at the sea of faces. Did you have the sense that, wow, I opened the gate here?
Wow. You know, it dawned on me much later. You know, I think my immediate reaction to the experience was, yes, we are opening the door. We are making, you know, some progress in this direction. But then to come back years later and to see, you know, how far advanced those few steps that we had taken had grown. And not only that, but there was such active involvement of the students in leadership roles, in leadership positions. You know, we had the president of the student body being a young black male, and So it was, you know, very encouraging and very rewarding to see how far the university had come in that direction.
Since then, you've received some impressive acknowledgments from the university. The parlor of your old dorm is named for you and Betty Tillman.
Yes.
That's kind of great.
Yeah, that was awesome. And I think the really cool thing about that was that it was the insistence of African-American students mm-hmm. on campus that there be some recognition. And they were the ones, you know, who initiated the action from the trustees and the board. And so that was very, very rewarding and very, very honoring.
Tell us about your career after that. As you said, you specialized in education. What were you doing?
I did. My first career was as a guidance counselor in a junior high school in Rocky Mount. And I got married and returned to Raleigh and applied for a guidance position in the Raleigh City Schools. And they hired me instead to work in the central office as a director of the testing program for the city. And I fulfilled a number of other roles. I worked in exceptional children. My career was spent between the city schools and the State Department of Public Instruction. And that's the area from which I retired as a consultant in the area of teacher accreditation. I had responsibilities for accrediting colleges and universities that had teacher training programs. So,
as you look back over that career, you talked about that moment in 1956, 2 years after Brown, this enormous hope that opens up. As you said, it took a lot longer. Mm-hmm. And there's been some fear that actually we might be going backwards. I wonder what your view today is on education in America.
Well, you know, it's heartening to know that we've made great strides, but it is disheartening to know that we haven't learned a lot from our history. And that in itself is rather discouraging. I think that, you know, if you don't know your history, then you're apt to repeat some of the same mistakes. And so I am very hopeful that we can continue to progress and not go back to things that as they were previously.
You talked about the importance of young people making the progress and carrying on the legacy that mm-hmm. you and Betty began. And I wonder if you look out over the horizon today, not only on questions of race, but other issues of public policy and social justice, if you're hopeful or how you feel about youth in America, young people in our education system today.
I'm very encouraged to some extent by youth, you know, in America today. Just thinking about the Parkland situation back down in Florida and how the students have taken the initiative to be engaged and be involved and lead the fight. It's just very encouraging and how that has spread, you know, to other communities across the state. So, you know, there are lots of things that we hear that are somewhat disappointing, but they are those bright lights that really are encouraging and so fulfilling. So I think, you know, given the youth in America today, we're going to be okay. We're going to be all right.
Going back to what has become UNCG, and I want to talk about that dorm a little bit, because actually there's also a $7 million professorship at UNCG that was named for you.
Well, you talk about an honor. When I learned that this distinguished endowed professorship was being named for Betty Ann Davis Tillman and myself, I was actually floored because for a number of reasons. But, you know, to think that it was a recognition for teachers who were doing outstanding work, you know, in their professional mm-hmm. fields, and to have that professorship be a means for selected people to do research, to improve their teaching, and to improve service to the community. I mean, how awesome is that?
Joanne, it is awesome indeed, and awesome to meet you, Joanne. Thank you so much for sharing this time with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Joanne Smart-Drain was one of the first women to desegregate the Woman's College, which has since become UNC Greensboro. She did it back in 1956. Just ahead, we're going to hear the music of Alexa Rose. Stay with us.